Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, one and all. This is Robert Rogers, the founder of Parkinson's Recovery in 2004. Parkinson's Recovery is dedicated to identifying options that are helping individuals find ways to reverse the symptoms that are associated with a diagnosis of Parkinson's disease. We have a wide window to consider many, many, many different options that really are helping people make a big difference to the quality of their lives. I host individuals on the radio show who come from a wide variety of backgrounds. Some individuals are medical professionals. Other individuals currently experience Parkinson's symptoms and have found ways to address those symptoms. I am honored and pleased to report to you that my guest today is a remarkable man who has been working for the last several years on a documentary that basically lays out everything we know from the research evidence about Parkinson's disease. Now, my guest, Rich Melvin, has sent me both of the discs that are preliminary preview kind of discs, not quite yet available for you to see. And I spent a delightful couple of hours, if not longer, on each one, looking at what he has basically summarized in terms of the research that has been done on Parkinson's disease. It is a spectacular documentary, I want everyone to know. I have never seen such a comprehensive review of research. So Rich not just focuses on recent research, which is what most academics would do. He goes back into the last century and even the century before. He looks at the origins of Parkinson's research, and you'll be amazed at the discoveries that he's going to be talking about today. So I was dazzled at the work, the comprehensiveness, the technical accuracy of what he has actually produced. And what he's going to do today for you is to talk not only about his own experience with Parkinson's symptoms, but he's going to lay out for you what he recommends you might consider in terms of a course of action. So it's my pleasure and honor to thank you, Rich Melvin, for taking the time to be a guest on the radio show today. And I have to do one thing, Rich. I keep forgetting to click you in live. There we go. Okay. Thank you for being on the show today.
Okay. It's my pleasure, Robert. And with a build-up like that, I hope the interview is half as good as your description of my documentary.
But, I know it will Rich.
We'll see. Okay. Well, first of all, let me tell you a little bit about myself. I'm a 54-year-old artist. I'm single, no kids, live an artist's life, and I have a rather eclectic background. I have academic degrees in business administration, master's degrees in painting and sculpture, and I've done acting and a whole bunch of things through the years. And I've been a generalist, and it's really no surprise to people who know me that I've gone ahead and done something like this. So let's get to the nitty-gritty. About 5 years ago, I started to feel what I called a general malaise. It was nonspecific, and it lasted several months, and it affected nothing on me. I just started to feel really bad. And one day, like a thunderclap, I started to have chest tremors, really stiff back and anxiety, sleeplessness, depression. And some of these symptoms were during the general malaise. I had a weakened neck muscles, ED, partial constipation, and depression. I mean, and the thing that really was weird is that I lost my sense of smell and I couldn't figure out why my food tasted like nothing. Vinegar was the only thing I could taste. And when looking at myself in the mirror, it was very bizarre. My right eyelid twitched uncontrollably, and my right hand started to shake a little bit. And I could look at my chest, and I had tremors, very large tremors. And so not being able to see the forest from the trees, I took a capsule of the amino acid tyrosine for the depression. Tyrosine is an amino acid that eventually gets converted into dopamine in the brain via a two-step process. I previously took tyrosine for a prior medical condition, which the occasional symptom was depression. And eventually this problem, it was an adrenal problem, got resolved by a doctor who practiced orthomolecular medicine. He used progressively higher dosages of natural supplements, which include vitamin C, vitamin B5, DHEA, and pregnenolone, and other things. And eventually I was tested and found to be not hormonally imbalanced anymore, because that's what an adrenal problem does. You're hormonally imbalanced. So it worked. Well, I had a vacation for about a year, and then unfortunately I started to feel ill again, and then I got all those symptoms. And after I took the capsule of tyrosine, I slept like I haven't slept for months. And though I still could see fasciculations in my stomach, and fasciculations are just like nerves twitching very rapidly, it's like a neurological pinball machine. I felt about 70% better. And, you know, most people, tyrosine really isn't used in most cases because of neurodegeneration. And, you know, it's because people lack the tyrosine hydroxylase enzyme, which converts tyrosine into levodopa. And let's see. I still use tyrosine a little bit, but it sort of got me stressed out because it produces a lot of noradrenaline and adrenaline. I mean, you know, if you're getting a lot of adrenaline in your system, yes, you could be stressed out. So I started to use levodopa from the Mucuna pruriens plant. And after I run out of my current cycle of like fish oil, which I take, I'm going to supplement levodopa with EGCG from green tea. EGCG from green tea is a decarboxylase inhibitor like carbidopa, which is half of levodopa and carbidopa, also known as Sinemet. And the thing is that EGCG is not particularly well absorbed. So there's certain things that need to be done to absorb EGCG with the levodopa. And one is to be taken with no caffeine. So drinking green tea with the levodopa wouldn't really help that much. The EGCG has to be a 94% purity, and it also has to be taken on an empty stomach, like when you wake up in the morning or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And it has to be taken with 200 milligrams of ascorbic acid and 1,000 milligrams of fatty acids from salmon, which is a very nice cocktail because they're both good for Parkinson's disease. And, of course, one of the first supplements that I started to take was DHA and EPA omega-3, because I found, you know, articles about that online, how it offers neuroprotection to the brain. And, well, let's face it, the brain is made mostly of fat, and whether we want to admit it or not, we're all fatheads, you know. That's just just the way things are. You know, I admit I'm a fathead. You know, it's, people who know me will be glad to confirm that at times. So I went on and I purchased DHA and EPA omega-3, and the second supplement that I started, and probably the most important one, was coenzyme Q10. I found a study that it slowed the progression of Parkinson's disease at 1,200 milligrams a day. I think the number is about 44%. The day I started to take CoQ10, my chest fasciculations, the neurological twitching, basically went away, and I felt much more stable and much more healthy. I felt my energy levels go up too. The interesting thing about studying the CoQ10 Parkinson studies, and I think they're basically, most of them are flawed or need to be redone, because first of all, the study which showed that CoQ10 slowed Parkinson's disease by a rate of about 44%. They used large doses of vitamin E, and a later researcher found that a high dose of vitamin D actually lowers the blood plasma levels of CoQ10. And you could even take like half that amount and you have higher blood plasma levels than taking 1,200 milligrams. So vitamin E should be avoided. And also, after the age of 40, the body has a more difficult time of converting ubiquinone to ubiquinol. First of all, both of those words, ubiquinone is the non-reduced form of CoQ10, and ubiquinol is the bioavailable reduced form. It's like the body taking, like a foundry taking iron ore and then crushing it, melting down to get iron. It's like ubiquinol has to be converted, or ubiquinone has to be converted into ubiquinol, which is much more reduced and stronger. Well, after the age of 40, the body has a tough time doing this conversion. And every single Parkinson's study, and I dare say that most of the study applicants were over the age of 40, the thing is that they used ubiquinone. So someone needs to do a Parkinson's study using ubiquinol, and I've never encountered one of them, not one. So hopefully someone listening to this will take the cue and maybe think it's a good idea. What I discovered with CoQ10 was that CoQ10 helps to correct mitochondrial dysfunction. And, I mean, if you've done any Parkinson's research, mitochondrial dysfunction is everywhere. And it became obvious to me that that would be the proper way of trying to combine supplements which, you know, which can kind of avert mitochondrial dysfunction or correct it and use that as therapy. And some of those things, that, besides CoQ10, you know, vitamin K, Don McCammon mentioned that, N-acetylcysteine, alpha-lipoic acid, and acetyl-L-carnitine all help to correct mitochondrial dysfunction. And I also take ribose. Ribose is the sugar that's used in every cell of the body, and it's very good for Parkinson's. Ribose is used by weightlifters to build muscle. Build muscle also. See, it's springtime. Okay. There are several supplements that I got the bright idea of using to try to correct mitochondrial dysfunction, which I don't take anymore. And I tried peak ATP because if adenosine triphosphate is deficient in cells of Parkinsonian patients and it helps to cause mitochondrial dysfunction, why not just take peak ATP? Well, I did take it with a combination of pyruvate. Pyruvate ester is used again by weightlifters to help build muscle, but the combination of all the other supplements I mentioned with peak ATP and pyruvate made me shake. I had so much energy, I could run around the block, you know, as a 52-year-old man, but, I mean, it was a bit much, you know. You have to know when to say when. So I was shaking a bit out of control, and it was like, it wasn't Parkinsonian syndrome, it was a syndrome of too much energy. So you can have too much energy. In terms of the vitamin, one single vitamin that made the biggest difference for me, it's a form of B12. It's called methylcobalamin. Methylcobalamin, like ubiquinol, which I previously mentioned for CoQ10, is the bioactive form. It's the reduced form of B12. And when I took it, I can only say that the effects were nothing less than astounding. Well, I put it under my tongue and immediately felt energized, and I was running around like a dog chasing its tail for 4 days. And it's true. I mean, at work, they thought I was a bionic man. And finally, my energy level calmed down to the point where I had a higher energy level than I previously did. And I actually surprisingly slept better. And the reason why I slept better is methylcobalamin. You don't sleep any longer when you take it, but you sleep more solidly because it helps to affect melatonin, which is your sleep hormone. which is melatonin sleep aid is good for Parkinson's too. It's very interesting. Other B vitamins I take which are important is riboflavin. There was a study done where patients, Parkinson's patients, took high dosage riboflavin and they quit eating red meat. And, you know, red meat and dairy aren't particularly good for Parkinson's disease patients because they can interfere with the absorption and conversion of levodopa into dopamine, because amino acids compete freely with other amino acids. So, you know, you Parkinson's patients mostly have carbohydrate meals for breakfast and lunch and have protein later at dinner so they can have an effective drug therapy. But the combination of riboflavin and quit eating red meat helped to improve this motor capability by 44 to 71%. And riboflavin is not exactly a cheap, it's cheap. It's very cheap. So, I mean, that was a no-brainer to take that one. The one vitamin I found to be the most interesting vitamin were both forms of niacin, which is vitamin B3. The first vitamin, which may have interest for Parkinson's disease patients, of course, is NADH. NADH is the coenzyme form of vitamin B3, and it was tested in a very large study with Parkinson's disease patients, and 80% of the patients felt relief. And Dr. Berkmeyer, the doctor who did the testing, he believes the patient should take about 40 milligrams or more. And NADH helped to improve the condition of the patients from about 10 to 60%. That said, the people who had the best response to NADH were early stage Parkinson's patients with the least amount of neuronal dysfunction. The other form, which I find to be the most fascinating vitamin of all time, even more so than vitamin C, is called nicotinamide. Or if for when we buy it at the counter, it's called niacinamide. Scientists call it nicotinamide. We call it niacinamide when we buy it. Niacinamide, unlike traditional niacin, does not cause flushing like niacin can. And nicotinamide is the precursor to NADH, the coenzyme form. So nicotinamide has to be reduced and converted into NADH, which is basically in every cell of the body. Okay, and the good thing about nicotinamide or niacinamide is that it's been shown to be neuroprotective in Parkinson's disease models, Alzheimer's disease models, Huntington's disease models. And I use it about 1.5 grams a day, which is quite safe because 3 grams a day or 3,000 milligrams is the maximum dose of it. Because it's been shown to help relieve some arthritis symptoms. Well, my knees aren't quite as good as they used to be. I'll just put it that way. And whatever I can do to lessen the pain of them, that works. So it does help with reducing some pain.
Rich, can you spell those two ingredients that you find are so useful?
NADH. There's a long name. It's like nicotinamide adenosine nucleotide. It's very long, but NADH, it's hard to miss that one. And the other one, the amide form of niacin is niacinamide, NIACINAMIDE, niacinamide. And, you know, it's good for, like I said, it's good for arthritis, and so I'm all for that. You know, aren't we all after a while? But the one of the most interesting things I discovered is that we've all heard about the using nicotine in Parkinson's disease studies, and that if you smoke over a long period of years, nicotine will decrease the chances of getting Parkinson's and increasing the chances of about everything else, really. But, you know, nicotine, it takes a simple oxidation reaction, just a simple chemical reaction, to turn nicotine into nicotinic acid, which is niacin. And so nicotine is structurally related to niacin, niacinamide, and NADH. Very interesting stuff. And a little more about niacinamide later, because what I found out also, which makes it so interesting, is niacinamide has antibiotic-like action. It kills germs. You know, so that's very fascinating. Okay, let's see. I had previously mentioned vitamin C. I'm going to mention it in conjunction with zinc. I discovered zinc after I finished the documentary, so this is virgin ground because I'm a continuous researcher. And let's see, what does this title say? Evidence of functional zinc deficiency in Parkinson's disease. And they found it in pretty much every person, 100 people. And there was another study which said patients, you know, there was an older study with adults with compromised immune systems in a home, and they gave them a zinc supplement of 30 milligrams a day with a multivitamin, and helped to boost their immunity. These were non-Parkinsonian patients. And the article said 40 milligrams a day can be harmful. And why is zinc and vitamin C so important? Well, when we get infections, what are some of the things that we're told to take when we get an infection? Zinc and vitamin C. And, well, this is a very interesting headline, Central Nervous System Infections and the Risk of Parkinson's. Parkinson's patients have a higher prevalence of central nervous system infections of bacteria and viruses than controls. So, and when you do have an infection, you need to, you know, your body, the zinc in your body gets depleted from fighting the infection. If you have continuous infections, you're continuously going to have low zinc levels. This really struck home to me because my whole life I've been burdened with some form of infection. And because I recently was tested for a medical condition that's treated in Europe and it's treated in America by alternative practitioners, and it's called pyroluria. And it's a hemoglobin malfunction, which essentially causes zinc depletion and vitamin B6. And I really looked into it because 2 years ago I had an ear infection with a bacteria called Pseudomonas aeruginosa. And then I had, about 9 months later, an infection around my eye, which the doctor said, if I didn't get it taken care of, it could cause encephalitis. I'm like, well, you know, we're reading that. Yeah, we're getting that taken care of. And after that, I started looking into zinc. And more recently, I had the test and I was borderline pyroluria, so I started to take zinc. And this is a very interesting, the next headline is very interesting. It's a study of ascorbate, which is, of course, is vitamin C, and zinc response of Parkinsonism. It was to report a case of Parkinsonism rapidly responsive to intravenous replacement of vitamin C and zinc, because he was found deficient in both. And also, there was a case of an 83-year-old man who had actually developed Parkinsonism from scurvy, which is quite interesting. So I take a good amount of vitamin C because the obvious, there's a long history of vitamin C and Parkinson's. Let's go to another mineral. I have a couple more to go. The one mineral which I take is, I also take selenium in the form of selenomethionine. Selenomethionine is the organic form of selenium, S-E-L-E-N-O-M-E-T-H-I-O-N-I-N-E. And selenomethionine has been shown to break up alpha-synuclein, which is the protein which can clog the brains of Parkinson's disease patients. And also, as a man, I have an overriding reason to do it because it's the best mineral for the prostate gland. So, you know, that's a kind of a no-brainer. Having said that, there was one negative study about selenium. It was the impact of selenium, iron, and copper and zinc in the on-off patients on L-DOPA therapy. People who had on-off had low levels of zinc once again in the cerebral spinal fluid and high levels of iron and selenium. Iron is a known neurodegenerative toxin in Parkinson's disease along with manganese. And it's the first time I've ever heard any mention of selenium. But the thing is that, I mean, selenium is used in and the amino acid management of Parkinson's disease. It was a case study, but done by a company called Neuro Research, and they reversed a man's Parkinsonism caused by paraquat. And that was the selling point for me, that and the prostate gland. So I do take selenium. And the next mineral is magnesium. And magnesium is a powerful mineral for Parkinson's disease. One of the things I figured out was that magnesium can be used to help prevent cerebral palsy in for women about ready to give birth, for premature babies. They inject women with magnesium sulfate, which is also known as Epsom salts to the rest of us. And it helps lower the chances of cerebral palsy. It's neuroprotective, and it helps to prevent against preeclampsia, which is high blood pressure in women. So, you know, there's a lot of symptoms which overlap between cerebral palsy and Parkinson's. Cerebral palsy is a non-progressive motor disorder in which, the patients may drool. They have one side of their body. They may drag their foot behind them. Tough time with eating and talking. And I mean, for any late stage Parkinson's person, some of this sounds very familiar. So I looked into magnesium more, and magnesium sulfate was shown to have an anti-dyskinetic effect. It lowers dyskinesia in MPTP lesion monkeys. So it can have an effect. And magnesium was also found to inhibit the spontaneous and iron-induced aggregation of alpha-synuclein. Once again, the protein which can clog the brains of Parkinson's and sometimes Alzheimer's disease, and it can lead to mental dementia. In terms of memory and learning, the one form of, since I don't have dyskinesia, I'm very fortunate, I'm basically what you call a non-progressor. After I started to take CoQ10, my symptoms were basically just held intact. And I can't feel twitching throughout my body, which when I'm sitting, which isn't fun, but you know it's a lot better than being motor impaired. But because of that, the form of magnesium I use is called magnesium L-threonate. Magnesium L-threonate, that's T-H-R-E-O-N-A-T-E, was basically developed to enhance memory and learning. And I've been taking it for a while, and I found out in about 2 or 3 days that it enhanced my memory. I was able to recall details better, information, whatnot. You know, so, I mean, I give it a big recommendation. I have no idea what effect it would have on people with who have the movement disorder and, you know, that sort of thing. But it does flood the central nervous system with magnesium, which does have a calming effect. They're getting applicants for a study for the enhancement of memory and learning in people with dementia, and which is very important. So, you know, there's some very good things. The other form of magnesium, which I use primarily in foot baths, or it can be used like magnesium sulfate, which are Epsom salts in the bath or in a foot bath. It comes in a powdered form. It's called magnesium chloride. And I like magnesium chloride because it's shown to reduce heavy metal detoxification. It pulls heavy metals out of you. And, you know, like I was saying, iron, magnesium, copper, lead, they're all associated with some sort of Parkinson's syndrome. And, you know, so magnesium chloride is a must. It also comes in a liquid form, which you can spray on your skin, which is good because some Parkinson's patients have a difficult time swallowing. So you can get a dose of magnesium by spraying it on the skin, and it can be a little irritating, so it can be washed off 20 minutes later about. The final mineral I take is iodine. I take it in a very specific form because iodine is very, it's very prevalent in brown kelp, which is an algae. People call it seaweed. No, it's a kelp, not a seaweed, because it was formed from algae. Previously on the show, Don McCammon was interviewed and mentioned that mannitol is in algae, which is brown kelp, to about 20%, 10 to 20% in studies. And the good news is, besides having iodine and mannitol in kelp, it also has a substance called fucoidin, F-U-C-O-I-D-A-N. Fucoidin, like mannitol, is a sugar that's found in brown kelp. It's in lower concentrations. It's only 4%, about 4% in brown kelp. But I could see those two being paired together to be a good complementary strategy, because people have consumed them together for decades. Yes, at lower doses, but still it's been consumed, so it's nothing really new to the human body. And about 75 milligrams to 300 milligrams daily is what's recommended for fucoidin for it to have an impact on the body. Well, see, I'm going to jump ahead to some of the possible causes of Parkinson's. And this stuff, I may take some of our listeners into the Twilight Zone here, because we all remember watching the Twilight Zone growing up. But, well, getting in the cause, right, don't we? We all know the causes of Parkinson's. People have theorized about them, but let's hear some of the theories. Of course, we know about chemicals being able to induce Parkinson's. In the early 80s, there was MPTP, which is a drug that was synthesized in fake heroin, which caused degeneration in the brain. It caused a bunch of junkies to get a Parkinsonian syndrome. MPTP is methylphenyl tetrahydropyridine. It's one of those long names. But the thing is that there's other schools. Let's eliminate the chemicals and let's go to bacteria. In 2012, I read Dr. Lawrence Brockmeyer's book, Parkinson's, Another Look, and he asked, is Parkinson's caused by a bacteria? What Dr. Brockmeyer went about to do was show that there were historic cases of Parkinson's, which people looked at closer, and they found out there was actually tuberculosis meningitis, which can cause a Parkinson-like syndrome. He also found cases TB that had a Parkinson-like syndrome, which basically were either cured or the symptoms nearly went away when they were treated with tuberculosis antibiotics. So, that's very interesting. And he also pointed out the most recent clinical studies that implicated a TB-like bacteria called Nocardia as being implicated in Parkinson's. The thing is, Nocardia is related to tuberculosis because it has a similar cell wall to it. First of all, Mycobacterium tuberculosis. Myco means fungal in Greek, and they thought for years that Nocardia was a fungus, but they found out it's really a bacteria. So we all know the dangers of just fungus alone, but imagine the fungus which has properties, a bacteria which has fungal properties, and that's what we're talking about. So let's look at some interesting headlines. Antibiotic rifampicin shows promise for Parkinson's disease in laboratory tests. Rifampicin is the number two tuberculosis antibiotic, and in numerous studies, it's shown to be neuroprotective in Parkinson's disease studies. And in one study in particular, there were two substances which were shown to decrease the alpha-synuclein herbicide interaction, which is one reason they think it can cause alpha-synuclein herbicides. And one was rifampicin, the TB antibiotic, and the other one was magnesium. So it's another good reason to take magnesium. There's a second line tuberculosis called cycloserine or ceramycin, and it's shown to be neuroprotective in a glutamate model of Parkinson's disease, because glutamates are very toxic to nerve cells. Glutamates are present at very low levels to be neurotransmitters, but at high levels, they can just fry nerve cells. Let's see. Here's another one. Tuberculosis drug PAS may cure Parkinson's-like illness. PAS is a second-line tuberculosis drug called para-aminosalicylic acid or 4-aminosalicylic acid. PAS in a miner's Parkinson's trial, because miners who are exposed to manganese can have Parkinson's-like symptoms, and it's very similar in, you know, very similar looking to Parkinson's, except you don't lose your sense of smell. The thing is that they, with one dose of PAS, they basically cured over 60 people, one dose of the drug. And there was one case online where a doctor reported that my colleague reported significant improvement in her Parkinson's patients with PAS orally. So there is some evidence to show that it may be good for idiopathic Parkinson's. And what PAS does is PAS is a manganese chelator. A chelation is basically to grab and hold a mineral or whatever and remove it. So PAS is capable of removing manganese. And studies have found that if you have high manganese exposure, you have an 80% increased risk of Parkinson's disease. And that's big, 80%. And where would you be exposed to manganese? Well, previously, gasoline had lead anti-knock additives. And when it was found out that that was very toxic, well, they had the bright idea, let's replace them with manganese anti-knock additives. So whether we want to or not, we've been breathing them in for years. The tuberculosis vaccine is called the BCG, the Bacillus Calmette-Guerin. It has a live attenuated Mycobacterium bovis. Mycobacterium bovis, like the name implies, is from cattle. And yes, it can be transmitted from cattle to humans to cause tuberculosis. And the thing is that they injected an attenuated, very weakened Mycobacterium bovis into mice, and they found out that it was neuroprotective in a rodent model of Parkinson's disease, which is very interesting. There's another, there's an immunomodulator called Freund's Pleat Adjuvant. It's emulsified mineral oil and inactivated and dried mycobacteria, usually Mycobacterium tuberculosis. And it was found to be also reduce inflammation and be neuroprotective in a Parkinson's disease model, which is interesting. Now it gets really strange. An existing Parkinson's disease drug may fight drug-resistant tuberculosis, and that Parkinson's disease drug is entacapone. Entacapone is primarily used for Parkinson's on-off condition. And in computer models, they found out that it should attack the Mycobacterium tuberculosis bacteria. It should kill it. And the lab dishes, they found out it did. One of the reasons why Parkinson's disease therapy is not so good is because levodopa, the combination of levodopa and carbidopa called Sinemet, is really not that good of a therapy. It stops working between 2 to 5 years, and you need bigger and bigger doses to the point where big dyskinesias, and you're shaking, etc. Too many side effects. And so there are 6 drugs that are being developed to replace it. And one of them is called methyl L-DOPA or Maliva-DOPA. Well, someone had the bright idea to test Maliva-DOPA in against various bacteria. And it found out it had a great antibacterial activity against over 400 bacteria, including 53 atypical, which are non-tubercular, mycobacteria and drug-resistant tuberculosis. So there's another Parkinson's drug shown to be potentially treat tuberculosis. Let's see. What about vitamin C and zinc? Do tuberculosis patients have any relationship to those? I have to say yes. Tuberculosis patients, Rashendabhi, have uniformly low levels of zinc, and vitamin C has been shown to kill tuberculosis because TB, the bacteria, needs iron to reproduce, and vitamin C penetrates its cell and causes it to oxidize the iron, and it kills the bacteria. Well, let's drop back to niacinamide, or what scientists call nicotinamide, for a little bit. Nicotinamide, which is quite neuroprotective in Parkinson's disease, through the investigation of nicotinamide, they found the number one and the number three tuberculosis antibiotics. The number one antibiotic is isoniazid, and the number three is pyrazinamide. Both of them are analogs of nicotinamide and are structurally related to nicotinamide. They can't be taken with nicotinamide because you would have drug-resistant tuberculosis. One would basically affect the drugs, and it lowers the efficacy very much. The interesting thing is that nicotinamide is also shown to kill MRSA in a lab dish. I mean, we're talking about something which is potent antibiotic-like activity without being an antibiotic. And also, the number one antibiotic, which I mentioned, is isoniazid, is an MAO inhibitor, a weak MAO inhibitor. Well, it just so happens that MAO inhibitors are part and yes, MAO inhibitors are therapy for Parkinson's disease, including, Deprenyl, which is selegiline or rosagiline. And MAO inhibitors were originally developed to treat tuberculosis. And just to wrap it up here, Parkinson's is genetically related to tuberculosis, leprosy, which are two mycobacterial diseases, and Crohn's. And Crohn's, the most implicated pathogen in Crohn's is a mycobacterium, which is called also paratuberculosis. And there are several headlines which are recent. M. paratuberculosis and Parkinson's disease, is this a trigger? The same scientist wrote an article, Parkinson's, just another infectious disease. And there's lots more. There's another bacteria which is lycnocardia and related to tuberculosis, which has produced Parkinson's disease in mice, and then they were treated with levodopa. So it just goes on and on. I mean, and there's other bacteria too, lipopolysaccharides, salmonella caused Parkinsonism in a lab assistant, Helicobacter pylori, which people may need to get looked for because it's a prevalent stomach bacteria. It can inhibit the absorption of levodopa, and you have a greater chance of having a worse case of Parkinson's if you have a Helicobacter pylori infection in the stomach. Of course, there's Lyme disease, which can imitate Parkinson's and over 300 different diseases. So, I mean, and the real problem with Lyme disease is that the tests are only 46% effective, which is sad. So they may say you don't have it, you could possibly have it. Well, now I have a fun fact that Robert and many of the listeners may find interesting. Previously, you had Don McCammon on as a guest, and I listened very, raptly, very interesting. And then I did a very simple search. Does mannitol have any antimicrobacterial activity? And gee whiz, yes, it does. The synthesis and antimicrobacterial evaluation of D-mannitol derivatives. And they tested it, and they found out that, yes, it does have antimicrobacterial activity against a very virulent strain of tuberculosis. And they're going to, thus they could be a good starting point to develop new lead compounds against multi-drug resistant tuberculosis. And they also found that is very good for preventing liver damage for tuberculosis drugs, which are very toxic. And it also is helpful for relieving management of edema in the brains of tuberculosis meningitis patients. So it just goes on and on. This is my surprise, Robert. I don't know what you think, but you did a whole program on something which I didn't realize was an anti-TB, but yes, it's being tested to work on tuberculosis.
Well, how fascinating, Rich.
Yes, and there's one last thing I would like to say about pathogens. is that the they're also testing viruses in terms of Parkinson's, and viruses have a little higher vault to jump over. And the reason why is because viruses have been shown to increase, to weaken the immune system, to increase the risk of Parkinson's. So it's like one hit will, you know, weaken the immune system, and then another hit may lead it open to getting Parkinson's. But the thing is, there's never been any cases of a permanent Parkinson's syndrome be initiated by like an Epstein-Barr infection. They're transient Parkinson's-like states. So that's, and I hope they find more and more linkage with viruses. But the heavy hitters right now, the information is very deep about bacteria because it can directly cause Parkinson's. So if you have any questions, please go for it.
Rich, are there any supplements that are related to mitochondrial dysfunction that you tried, you experimented with, but stopped using for whatever reason?
Okay, I think I touched on that, and I went through and just plowed through everything. And the ones that I mentioned were peak ATP. I think I mentioned that. The other was pyruvate, because they made me shake funny, very not in a funny manner, really. I wasn't laughing very much.
Right, but, exactly.
But I was really, really shaky. And, I mean, if I didn't take all the other things, I think they might be able to work, but it was just too much. It was just I was running around like a crazy person, shaking, and it was like, you know, they had to go. It took me about a day to get off of them, and I returned to normal. The one thing that peak ATP does, and I'm glad you asked that question, is it also increases uric acid levels, which have been shown to be low in Parkinson's disease patients. And the Michael J. Fox Foundation tested a supplement called inosine, which raises uric acid levels, and it passed the bar of non-futility. That's a big scientific word, just meaning it worked. And but the thing is that no one's really going to test it any further because there's no money to be made off of it. As any of us know that, it's about money, and each drug that gets developed for Parkinson's has to go through 2 preclinical and 5 clinical phases. And the combination thereof costs between $200 million and $2 billion. And, I mean, who's going to develop a new form of magnesium for $2 billion to develop it at to get $30 a month for it? It's not going to happen. So that's one of the barriers of, drug development, cost and reward.
Right. One of the substances that you referred to is one that I think a lot of listeners are probably unfamiliar with, methylcobalamin. Can you first of all spell that? Can you spell it for people?
Okay, sure. It's methylcobalamin. Methylcobalamin. Because basically... Go for it.
I was going to just ask, can people acquire that at a health food supplement store?
Yes. Methylcobalamin can be easily purchased in a health food store, and it comes in doses like 2.5 to 5 milligrams. I'm off with my dosages here. But the thing is that it's a real energy-inducing vitamin shown to relieve peripheral neuropathy in diabetes patients and help to repair nerve cells. And it's the only form of B12 which exists in the human brain. So, I mean, if it's not a reason to take it, I don't know what is.
Really?
You know, really. Methylcobalamin, it was a big energy booster, and I was just running around like a maniac. It was amazing. I've never experienced anything like it. And fortunately, like I said, you actually got to sleep better. So that's a big plus.
Really? Well, yes. Can you summarize? You've done all this incredible research, and you're taking this array of supplements that obviously are making a difference. Describe for folks the symptoms that you currently experience.
Okay, well, I'm basically in a I'm a non-progressor. I think someone mentioned that phrase earlier in a show. I can't remember who. But the symptoms that I feel right now are just twitching. I mean, I don't have any real movement that's being affected by the disease. But I when I sit down and I'm not doing anything, which I don't like to do, I can feel twitching primarily through my left arm and some of my legs. I can feel neurological twitching, which I didn't previously experience. Fortunately, my sense of smell recovered and food tastes normal. And most of that happened after I started taking the CoQ10. And then the one good thing that I found out is by discovering these supplements slowly and over time, that when you take one supplement at a time, not multiple supplements, you can feel if there's any difference in your body. If you take more than one thing at a time, who's to know what's the most effective thing? So this stretched out over years, and I could gently feel what worked and what didn't work in terms of like PKPP and pyruvate. They were done separately. I knew to quit them immediately.
So what brand of CoQ10 do you purchase and use for yourself?
Well, I'm kind of a broke artist. And it's not really even a brand name. Most of the CoQ10 is made in Japan and shipped worldwide. I just take a generic form of CoQ10, but when I take it, I take early in the day, I take it with piperine. It's an alkaloid from black and long peppers. Piperine has been shown to be a bioavailability enhancer, and it enhances the absorption of any CoQ10 by 30%. And with other things, it has shown to affect drugs and supplements to the tune of either about 30 to 2,000%, which is fine if you're not taking any drugs. But let's just say you're taking an antihypertensive, which you want to lower your blood pressure, and then you take something which potentiates its effect. I mean, that could be a very dangerous situation. But fortunately, I'm not on any drugs. But yes, I take generic CoQ10, ubiquinone, and I'm still having a positive response to it. So, but if I feel that my condition gets more twitchy and I can feel more secondary, you know, symptoms, I'm going to ubiquinol. Definitely.
Now, individuals listening to this incredible description of the research on Parkinson's have really just been diagnosed within the last month or two. What would you want to say to them right now?
Well, the first thing I would say, it's very, very simple. It doesn't matter if you go to an alternative practitioner or a regular medical doctor. It's three words: exercise, exercise, exercise. Every study has shown that exercise slows the progression of Parkinson's disease. Like weightlifting, which I used to do when I was a younger person because I was an athlete. Weightlifting lowers your risk of Parkinson's by 40%, and it's very good for the disease. Bicycling is good for Parkinson's. Fast walking is good for Parkinson's. If you can swim, swim. That's one of the most important things you can do. And, of course, secondly, we are what we eat. You know, they've done studies on food and Parkinson's, and the conventional style diet with heavy meat and cheeses is not very good for Parkinson's patients. A more lighter style diet, like the Mediterranean diet, which has been highlighted so often, which is higher in vegetables, grains, and fish. You know, it's very light. It has moderate wine drinking and garlic and et cetera. And if you analyze the Mediterranean diet, what supplements make it neuroprotective? Well, first of all, extra virgin olive oil and olive leaves have a substance called oleuropein. Oleorpin is part of any olive leaf extract. Oleorpin is shown to be neuroprotective in Parkinson's disease models. What else is in the Mediterranean-style diet? Well, resveratrol from wine. Resveratrol, another neuroprotective agent. What else? In garlic, there's a substance called allicin. Allicin is neuroprotective in Parkinson's disease. What else do they have? It has high in DHA and EPA omega-3s because it's a fish-oriented diet. So, I mean, if you look at the Mediterranean diet, that's definitely the way to go.
Now, you have been working now for several years on this incredible documentary. When do you predict this might be available for people to actually acquire?
Well, I hope you're like Karnak from Johnny Carson or something, because right now I can't tell you. if I had to guess, a wild guess, I would probably say perhaps 6 months or so, because, I mean, I'm so detailed, slightly OCD here, and there's over 600 scientific references in it. And I still have one book which I need approval to put the information in to be shown in public. And so I'm about halfway through the 300, 300 credits to go, and it's just like, geez, you know. So it's a daunting. Let me put it this way. When I finish and it becomes available, I'll let you know. How's that?
Oh, fantastic. And we will put that information out. Rich Melvin's website is www.richardmelvin.com. So I'll spell that for everyone. RICHARDMELVIN.com. And you have several amazing pieces of art that you've also developed here just recently. Can you tell people about those?
Well, yes. The one thing about olfactory function, when I lost my sense of smell, I used to go out on walks, and the walks seemed very sterile. I mean, Parkinson's disease is known to be an anhedonic state, a state without pleasure. I mean, let's face it, your food doesn't taste like it used to. It disrupts your sex life. You can't smell things. Your quality of life, unfortunately, goes downhill. And when I went out on walks, I found that I couldn't appreciate the trees and the shrubs and the herbs. So I did several paintings which reflected my knowledge of the lack of olfactory function or losing the sense of smell. And I equated that with an achromatic painting, a painting without color, because I really believe that your sense of smell is something we take so for granted that we just, you know, even more than sight or hearing, you know, that when I lost it, everything seemed like it was a black and white film. And only when I started to regain it did I realize how much of that your sense of smell is so powerful, and you just, it's amazing how you feel when you miss it. But yes, the loss of a sense of smell was, I consider it to be an anhedonic state without pleasure. And the two paintings I did were two trees, which I just used as symbols of the loss of sense of smell. So they were very muted color schemes. And that, for me, that's different because I'm primarily a colorist. I do brightly colored paintings, not fluorescent, anything like that. But I'm not afraid to use color, and they were very reduced to the point where I almost used no paint, no color.
Wow. Now, Rich Melvin, if people want to get in touch with you and have some follow-up questions they'd like to be able to address, how might they be able to do that?
Oh, you can go right through my website. Thank you for the shameless promotion moment, too. It's richardmelvin.com. You can go right through the website and contact me. It's in under the contact the artist, contact Rich, whatever it is. It's at the top of the page.
Now, you have shared such amazing insights, and I can tell you for sure that people have listened to some of these suggestions, have never really thought about these as options before. If there's a bottom line you want people to remember about this discussion, one kind of thing you want people to remember after listening to this radio show interview, what would it be?
Try to have a focused therapy. Because there are smaller companies out there. I mentioned Neuro Research in their case study, amino acid management, and they reverse Parkinson's by doing a very specific goal, and that's balancing serotonin and dopamine and other things, but they reverse the man's Parkinson's. And I have met other people online who are on the protocol, and it is reversing their Parkinson's. Not curing, reversing is a big difference. When you have to continuously take therapy, it's not a cure, but it makes them functional. In another company out there called the BX Protocols, they're reversing Parkinson's by correcting mitochondrial dysfunction. They're using I don't know what supplements they're using, I can guess, but they're using very specific supplements. And there are YouTube videos from the BX Protocols showing before and after, and the people talking about their experience about reversing mitochondrial dysfunction. What I'm saying is that you just can't throw a random amount of supplements and expect to have a result. There's got to be a goal or some physical result, which are in the crosshairs of the supplementation. Mitochondrial dysfunction, relieving specific deficiencies, that sort of thing.
Richard Melvin, I want to, on behalf of the many thousands of listeners of Parkinson's Recovery Radio, thank you for the incredible work that you have done over these last few years and for your openness and willingness to share your insights for people who are also experiencing symptoms of Parkinson's disease.
Yes, I'm glad to do it because I understand. I understand where they're at. And one of the things that I did not mention also is my father has Parkinson's. I forgot to mention that. Hi, Dad. Love you. But the thing is that the reason why I went to just do what I did with an alternatives was I saw my father's therapy. I may have mentioned that, I don't know, but that was the defining moment. I just couldn't do it.
Right.
So go ahead, please.
You decided to take another route then.
Absolutely. Well, I'd like to thank everyone for listening. And like Robert says, if you have any questions or comments, just go through my website and, I'll be happy to converse with you.
And we will be sure and announce when Rich Melvin has his final issue of his documentary for release, which I know all of you will want to get a copy of. Rich Melvin, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for being on the radio show today.
It's my pleasure, and thank you very much, and enjoy the beautiful day.
Well, we thank you. And that's what's happening on the shores of the Puget Sound, where all the women are smart, all the men are handsome, and all the children are truly loved. I'm Robert Rogers, the founder of Parkinson's Recovery, which is dedicated to providing support, information, and resources to individuals who currently experience the symptoms of Parkinson's disease. May you have a most magnificent week this coming week. Good day.